This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
No, my bookie, right?
No, oh, we're done with my bookie. We are completely done with my bookie. I'm told we're supposed to be paid by them. Yeah, sure. We'll see. Anyway, all right, AB, it's to you, Big Cat, and three, two, one.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm AB, joined as always by my good friend, Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
Hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Aaron Mike Spears. I'm doing about as well as I usually am. Like, I usually have like a witty catchphrase here. I've been at a 6 on the mental health meter, you know, for a while, even though really, it's much less than a 6, but that is a display of my mental health, the fact that I'm unwilling to just simply erase a part of the thermometer. But, you know, I'm trucking. Let's keep it to that. How are you doing, AB?
Doing okay. I'm grappling with my recent soda consumption.
Sure.
I've gotten really into root beer during quarantine, or during COVID, I suppose. And I'm drinking one a day at this point.
And I drink a pop a day. I understand that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure it's good for me.
No, it's terrible for us. We're drinking stuff that's tearing apart our insides, but we have to find something to give us a little bit of life right now.
Well, what I knew it was bad was last night after I ate dinner and drank a root beer with it, I thought I could really go for another root beer. I was like, this is probably bad. We're also joined by Nate. Nate, what's your soda consumption?
Well, so we did just discuss soda to open last week's show. That out because I was drinking a 7-Up. We talked about D&L for, I don't know, 25 minutes.
All right, well, let's keep.
Yeah. No, I was thinking the same exact thing today, actually, because I have been probably drinking a 7-Up a day since I bought, you know, one of the little packs, one of the gimmicks. And I was out and I was thinking, oh, I should stop by Walgreens so I can get a cola, so that I can have some semblance of energy for this podcast recording and pretend like that there's any sort of internal, you know,
combustion,
any sort of internal combustion driving me forward. But yeah, no, I was like, really been drinking a lot of cola. Do think that it kind of makes me just a little more lethargic than I was when I was not drinking as much cola. So I didn't pick anything up. I'm drinking water. So that's where I'm at with the soda consumption.
Wow. I'm really proud of you, Nate. I'm usually an all water, only water guy. And I've gone too far down this soda road.
I love beverages. That's the thing.
We got love a drink.
We got Indian food at the office the other day. And I got a sweet lassi, just some sort of salty yogurt beverage.
Was it just a normal lassi or was it a mango lassi?
It was sweet. No, it was salty. I'm sorry. It was the salty lassi. And, you know, my boss gave it to me. He's like, I know this is for Nate because he always gets the beverages. And I do. I love a beverage. I love a flavorful drink, an orange juice, a tea, a coffee, a craft soda. I love a flavored beverage.
I'm a beverage guy myself, so I appreciate it.
I don't know. You just said you're only a water guy usually.
Yeah.
I don't know. You might be a beverage poser, not to come down on you too hard here.
No, it seems
like you're kind of trying to bite my beverage thing a little bit.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to do that. It's just more
I am
that
kidding.
My whole thing is denying myself the joys that I might otherwise find in life.
Okay.
So I really like beverages, but I mostly deny them because I hate myself, basically. That's really what it comes down to.
I thought it was going to be more like a martyr complex where you're like really getting off on denying yourself. But it's actually just because you don't want to make yourself happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were just being like an aesthetic as like a monastic choice.
No, I mean, I don't want to get too into like my actual mental illness on the show, but like, I really despise like the body that I live in, you know? And so it's like every time I drink a soda, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to hate myself more if I do more of this. So that's really it.
Those are taste good though. They taste really, really good.
They taste delicious.
So it's just sugar in there and flavors, and you're like,
yeah,
don't even have to chew. Does all the work for me.
I know.
I mean, well, we did live in a. Did we ever live in an age where there were chewy pops? Like, I think that was something that was never a construct. That, yeah.
That is gross, but also it's boba tea.
Boba tea, yeah. I haven't had a boba tea. You know, last time I had a boba tea, it was when we were in New York with Big Treat, and we went out for treats. That was nice. My last boba tea. I could really go for a boba tea right now.
I will say that when I did the Japanese candy gimmick, lots of the box, what's it called, Nate?
The Japan crate that I believe your wife bought for you as a gift.
My mother actually bought that for me as a gift. But a lot of cola flavored treats. So a lot of colas you could chew.
Mm.
Like gummy cola style treats.
Yeah, remember those little gummies that were little Coke cans? Those were good.
The wax one? You remember like the wax bottles that you'd bite into it? It would have the juice inside, and then you chew up the wax. And then if you were a total disaster kid like I was, I swallowed it because I have my own self-loathing bags.
I don't remember like wax ones that weren't meant to be eaten, but I do believe.
I mean, I just assumed all of them were like, I was like a goat, you know, as a kid, I probably ate a good solid portion of a Starkiss roll. Like, including the wrappers. Like, it's a wonder that I have made it to almost 35. Like, I only started caring about my body when I hit 20, you know?
I gotta say, I think opening with soda again worked. I mean, I think it paid off, honestly.
I appreciate that both of you overshare so much, because then I just don't have to say anything here.
Yeah. No. It's helpful. I mean, I lead off with on the whiteboard behind me how bad I'm doing each time. I did get my own Japanese candy order that is going to be coming soon.
Is that right? Did you get the Japan crate also?
I think this is Sagoy Mart, which I think is same thing.
Same company, I think.
Same thing. I'm a big Kit Kat boy. Love me a Kit Kat.
Well,
so
Japan is the place for you.
Boy howdy, let me tell you about the three kinds of Kit Kats I have coming my way. I have a matcha tiramisu big matcha boy here, big tiramisu guy as well. Sweetness for adults. This is like that Pocky masculine thing that you were talking about a while back, Nate.
This
like
is really going against your never horny gimmick, Mike.
Sweetness for adults. Sweetness for adults. It's supposed to be like a white chocolate one, and then sparkling wine with strawberry, which is probably going to be pretty gross, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, they're all good. All their flavored Kit Kats are good for sure.
If you like, I mean, I know Nate just said this, but if you like matcha flavored things, again, Japan is the place for you. They had everything matcha flavored.
I did. I posted that screenshot from the new season of Yuru Camp of just matcha tiramisu. And a matcha latte of some kind. It was just drooling. It's so good.
You're kind of a Shimaren, I would say. You're kind of the Shimaren around here, I'd say, Nate.
Okay, I'll take that. I do tire of most people after, you know. Let's see, how long do these usually take? 90 minutes. I'll say 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours is about the maximum I can have of any person.
Yeah, and we spent 10 days together.
Yeah, that was good. We did well.
Yeah, we did do well. Yeah, we didn't like share a hotel room or anything, you know, so we could all go our own way at times. Don't get me started. I've been listening to a lot of Fleetwood Mac lately.
Have you? I never got into Fleetwood Mac. I like Tusk.
Yeah?
I like what's Lindsey Buckingham's good solo song?
They're all good, first of all.
Holiday?
Well, there's Holiday, yeah.
So I'm going through the Rolling Stone top 500 albums list from 1 to 500. And I came across Fleetwood Mac Rumors, which, like, I knew some of the songs, but a buddy of mine, like, maybe last year told me to listen to it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is good. But then I went through it recently, and I have become obsessed with it. I just think it's amazing, and I just listen to it all the time now.
I think this has been sort of happening. I mean, obviously it was a meme last year, but I think over the last 5 years, they've had a real, not that they weren't hugely popular in the first place.
Yeah, that album sold 40 million copies.
Yeah, that's a fair amount. Holiday Road. That's the big
one. Hey, I feel like once every 20 years, Rubers gets a really big theme because remember Bill Clinton's 92 election used Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow?
Indeed, I do.
And his name. And Rumors, an all-time album about everyone cheating on everyone else with people within the band.
Yeah, it's very cool. I watched the Classic Albums episode about it. Are you guys Classic Albums fans?
No.
No clue. No clue.
It's a BBC series about, they go into like the recording of folks' classic albums. And it's pretty good.
Big Sunner there.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to read about classic podcasts, go over to @everythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. You can subscribe to the podcast on the app of your choice. If it's the Apple Podcast app that you use, give us a 5-star rating and a review over there. And if you want to support the show, the absolute 100% very best way to do so is to go over to patreon.com/everythingelite and sign up. All right, we will start the show. I mean, we already started the show, but we will start the AEW portion of the show with Elite or Delete. Nate, I think this was a very well-received episode of Dynamite. The people who always add us to say, like, we're too negative. Not going to happen today, folks. I think we're all going to be very positive. So what was your favorite part of the show?
Yeah, really good show. Pretty much enjoyed every part of it. You know, one of those shows where I went into it after a long day of work and whatever bullshit on Twitter that was making me mad. And just like, oh, that was fucking fun to watch. It won me over. Not the easiest thing to do. So, great show. I think, what did I really like on it? Should I have given this any thought beforehand? I guess probably the main event was probably my favorite thing. It's very funny to me that the Good Brothers are just on this roster now. It's like AEW's like, yeah, you know, we kind of wanted to sign them when they were released, and they went and re-signed with the WWE, and then they had some heat, and now it's like that's been settled, and like, all right, well, now we do want to have them, so we're just going to take them from Impact. That's funny to me. It's still fun and novel to see, you know, an Impact team here tagging with the Bucks. Talk about on the Patreon the Good Brothers appearance on the vlogs and just the stupid shit that they do. And they just brought that whole same energy to TV this week with the big Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows swinging his belt dick and Carl Anderson like flopping his hands at it. Carl Anderson just amuses me. It, you know, I don't, whatever stupid bullshit he does is always going to make me crack a smile. And they had a really good match here against the Dark Order, against four guys who were like, you know, the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers 5 years ago or whatever were among the top talents in Japan. You know, it would be like a big deal if Ring of Honor brought in Carl Anderson to appear on a pay-per-view or something. People would be like, oh, hell yeah, Bullet Club's here. Meanwhile, the Smash Brothers were like banned to Canada, and John Silver and Alex Reynolds were like, you know, grinding it out in the Northeast. But here they shared a main event. You know, they got in all their sweet spots. All these guys are experts at this style where, you know, things come in and out of focus and you have everybody get their shit in and it all flows naturally from one thing into the other. John Silver did his, you know, Cesaro Jr. hot tag to the entire Bullet Club. Stu Grayson did his cool reverse taekwondo kick or whatever that he learned when he was 10 years old. It was just a joy to watch, and watching Luke Gallows feed for Stu Grayson is just so funny. And it was a good match. That's all.
It just was a good time. And y'all know my number one goal whenever I watch any programming is am I going to have a good time? And let me tell you, this Atomico's main event was a great time for one Mike Spears. I was happy. John Silver, hot tag, you know, you know how much I love hot tags, like a good hot tag where someone comes in House of Fire and just blows shit up. And the fact that they need to eventually have like another 12 or 14 man tag so John Silver can just go do one insane spot to every person when he comes into the match, where he goes around, he starts in the ring and then goes outside of the ring and he goes around ringside and gets back into the ring. Like it's very much like Family Circus Jeffy at its very best, like seeing where he's going to go before he ends up there. Doc Gallows is someone that is Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows, Impact Doc, a great wrestler? I don't know. But is he someone that when he pops up, I just am amused and I'm just like, all right, Gallows, because he will find just dumbest things to pop me like backstage with the whole, what was that line he said? He called Don Callis like the Donaconda. The Donaconda, like stuff like that. It just was a great time. And it was something that on a match that could have gone to a bad place or could have been like an absolute mess. Instead, you had like the best idea for like these styles of matches, where if you're not doing an elimination match, then you have to build up to ebbs and flows and crescendos. And like the perfect crescendo happened right before the finish, as you should have in these 6-man, 8-man, 10-man, however people mini match, where everyone's going in and out, things are coming in focus, out of focus, like Nate said, and you get, and then it comes to a satisfying conclusion. And it's just kind of hard to walk away from this main event without like, at the very least being impressed or just enjoying it. It just was a great time.
I'm hoping that this is like a perfect relationship in that Luke Gallows will go away in 5 to 6 weeks and I won't have to see him anymore. Cause like, no way. I'm really enjoying this right now, but I will be tired of him with some quickness. I mean, come on. Do you remember like toward the end of that run in New Japan?
Yes, it rocked.
Yeah, but he was like miserable in G1s in New Japan. You had to have him like wrestle singles matches against Togi Makabe.
we're not going into Niigata and having a main event of a G1 of him and Hiroki Goto.
And like now, like half the joke here also is like they'll be on BTU and they'll be like, you know, we don't want to wrestle. Don't put us out there. Just want to dick around backstage and be good brothers. It's like perfect.
Well, if they do that, I'll be on board. But I did. I mean, basically, as soon as he came on camera and started saying BizKliz, I was just like cackling the rest of the segment.
They've got a great dynamic because it is extremely aggressively stupid, but they are enjoying themselves so much. But they play it well because even if you hate these guys and you think all the dick humor or whatever is sophomoric and you know, not funny or whatever, like the Bucks are right there on your side being like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are still like this. Like, we are parents, we are adults, we are millionaires. You guys need to grow up or whatever.
So we run a wrestling promotion.
Yeah. They're having their cake and eating it too in that way.
And it's something that, and I'm just gonna throw this out there. I think that, and it's something that I really enjoyed out of him before quarantine and everything like this, but the Chris Jericho just very like pompous dickhead energy. I called him like the Danny McBride, Jody Hill, aggrieved, angry man energy. Luke Gallows is that, but like to Super Saiyan level 3. So like, it's just great because he is someone that's not afraid to show his whole ass. And that is something that I would not be surprised if sometimes we end up seeing Luke Gallows' whole ass, literally. Like, and it's something that he'll come up here and he'll say something like an absolute asshole and I start laughing.
He's a funny dude. Michael Spears, what is your elite pick for this week?
I didn't know we were going to get real formal right there.
Sorry.
I don't know. Yeah. Like as Nate said, this was a really enjoyable show, pretty much start to finish. But the thing that like I came away with, and I will take my mini L because of what I said on AEW Lite, available on patreon.com/everythingelite, where I said that I was not hyped at all for this FTR Bald versus Jungle Boy match. And they spent significant time towards it on Road to Dynamite, where Jungle Boy just, he can't cut a promo. Like it's something where like he does not like show charisma, like cutting promos or things like that. He's a very mild-mannered person. That seems to be something that is like a stumbling block. But what you had here in this match between him and FTR Bald was just another great performance from Jungle Boy, who, when you put him in like these singles matches, like the one that he had against MJF at Fighter Fest, which was like truly exceptional. No, it wasn't Fighter Fest. That was at Double or Nothing. But it was like a truly exceptional one-on-one match. You need another one here with another very satisfying win that could have built to something. But now they are going to have a more prolonged Jurassic Express versus FTR feud and with the post-match beatdown, which, like, that was a very effective beatdown they had. It's kind of heating up a program in a division that usually the focus is only really towards one or two things at one time, and now we have this really cool option here that's like, they tore up Luchasaurus's mask. Are we going to, like, see something, like, big coming out of that? And I think that's a very intriguing thing as we look into Revolution coming up in just over a month.
Yeah, I think they kind of had their cake and ate it too here, because it was good to see just a straightforward, I don't know if you'd call it old school wrestling match, but it wasn't, you know, but I'd be pressed to call it like PWG style. It was like a simple wrestling match where the babyface won, tapped him out clean in the middle with his move. But you also had the added stipulation of Luchasaurus at ringside with the other two people handcuffed into him. So it gave you a little bit of that storyline advancement and kind of a little goofy stipulation here with something out of the ordinary going on the outside, but didn't actually, you know, interfere with the match. Didn't, you know, do more distraction bullshit where you're like, okay, that's just WWE shit where we're not going to get any sort of clean winner one way or the other until maybe the pay-per-view. They stayed away from that. They just had the babyface end up being the better man, and then, you know, had a little bit of a hot angle afterward. And I think it succeeded on all counts there. I think Dax is the better of the FTR guys. You know, he works at a really great pace and lays stuff in. And in this singles context, got to do more cool spots than I think we usually see from him, like his little slingshot power bomb looked pretty cool. He had a great looking top rope backdrop that I don't know that we see very often. So I enjoyed that. And yeah, Jungle Boy is just actually good and held his end of the bargain up here and pulled out some cool shit. So yeah, this was, I don't know if this exceeded my expectations because I was pretty sure this was going to be good. I think I'm just at that point with Jungle Boy now. I'm just like, I am interested in watching this guy just wrestle an honest-to-goodness wrestling match.
Yeah, I mean, he builds up this this goodwill, I think, you know, at least among our kind of people, by having, like, an actual good match and not doing, you know, Midnight Express cosplay for the night. Then he runs to Twitter and he tweets, "Just because you beat Jesse James don't make you as bad as Jesse James. And Jack, I am the baddest."
God,
just shut the fuck up. Like, let us just enjoy what you did for one evening.
Their tweets are bad.
Their tweets are so bad.
The tweets are not good.
They're bad tweets, folks.
Bad tweets. Like, one of the worst crimes you can commit in pro wrestling.
I agree. All right. My time, my turn, my pick. I'm going to go maybe off the board a little. Not, I mean, if you're an $8 subscriber to our Patreon, it's on the board, baby. But maybe off the board for most people. But Red Velvet getting the Brandy spot in the eventual Cody, Jade Cargill, Shaq match, I think is great. I think it's huge. I think it's a great way of, I mean, it fell into their laps, but working in someone who you wouldn't have expected to be in a spot with, you know, Shaq, on probably on this pay-per-view in March. And she comes out there, stares down the camera and cuts a really nice promo. Doesn't feel like the moment's too big for her. Also, she's a good worker, so maybe that will be helpful to Jade. You know, we don't know what Jade's level is at this point. We'll find out. But anyway, just happy that they put her in this spot and that she so far is delivering. So good for her.
Yeah, that was good. It also helps that it maintains a little bit of the storyline continuity because Brandy had been, you know, mentoring Red Velvet or whatever, coming out with her for matches. And, you know, Red Velvet's been getting involved in the all these backstage attacks with Jade Cargill, where at one point she was allied with Nyla Rose and Vicky Guerrero, and that's been dropped. And there was all these other people running around backstage. But at least there's some common thread with Jade Cargill and, you know, going at Red Velvet. So that helps because the storyline's been pretty disjointed otherwise. And yeah, I think the real takeaway and the real positive to come out from that is I thought her promo was really good. Was very impressed by her presence on, you know, her real significant, her first real significant attempt at that. You know, Jade Cargill, I think, has played her role well and has started to assert herself and feel like she has some confidence. But, you know, her first promo with Cody when she came out was, you know, competent, but you could feel that there was like a little bit of nerves. Like, oh, yeah, I am out here going toe-to-toe with Cody on television and nobody knows who I am and this is the first time. Whereas didn't really get that with Red Velvet. Red Velvet was like, I know what a promo looks like in this situation. And I'm going to go out and do it. So, yeah, great, great person to plug into this this angle, since it's, you know, all the other parts of it have just sort of flown off in every other direction.
It really was something that last night we finally had coherence in the storyline, because we had this segment and then we had Shaq on their fake award show and Shaq like laying it out there. And then now in a lot of ways, Red Velvet has, over the last few weeks, has become the glue of this storyline. And it's something that's very necessary with how disjointed and how kind of pie in the sky of an idea it felt for a long time. But she brought the added gravity needed here, and it's something that, like, you see someone stepping up to the plate and knocking out of a park in a scenario where we've seen people in those scenarios completely just fall on their face or, you know, strike out. So it was very nice to see her step up, especially considering that she's someone that, ever since they have been stationed in Jacksonville, she has been someone that's really, when they've given Red Velvet an opportunity on Dark, and I believe in other fashions, like, she's been on Dynamite before, she stepped up, and it's nice to see that she's starting to get recognition for that. And it's going to be on her in a lot of ways for this match. If this is how this way is going to go, it's going to be on her, because you look at Shaq, we don't expect Shaq and Cody to be doing anything other than brawling and like this, but it's going to be someone that you're going to need to have Red Velvet be able to show up, unless Jade Cargill is this Utami Hayashishita like prodigy out of the gates. So it's nice to see someone like step into that role, and then when given an opportunity, just completely kill it. So yeah, no, Red Velvet was a definite highlight of last night.
All right, well, let's hit the listener elite. And in fact, we have a massive elite, our first ever massive elite in the listener elite section. Our friend Kara from Twitter says, massive elite, the most electrifying move in sports entertainment, the Lion Salt, as Chris Jericho bounces back from his shitty Lion Salt from last week and hits one and then, you know, very pointedly stares the camera down.
Yeah, good fuck you energy from Chris Jericho there. Love both he and Britt Baker did a great job of hitting their finishers and staring the camera down, which is just a nice little heel bit to do.
All right, well, let's talk about the things we didn't like. And, you know, as we said, I think we're going to be pretty picky here because we pretty much liked most of the episode. So, Nate, get us started. What was something you really didn't like from this show?
So this I did give some thought, and mostly because I was listening to the Flagrant Ones podcast today, and they spent a lot of time taking it to Shaquille O'Neal. Him specifically with reference to burying Donovan Mitchell on the Inside the NBA show and then getting mad and whining about it on Instagram. Yeah, so he cuts this promo on the awards show and just doesn't have anything for it. I don't know. You would expect Shaq to have better teardown promo chops, right? Like, he was one of the most engaging guys in the NBA, supposedly, in his time there. He's like, oh, he's actually funny. Shaq can actually be funny in commercials. Shaq actually can act in movies. You know, Shaq should have inherited some kind of trash-talking ability from being in the NBA at the time of Michael Jordan. Like, there has to be something deeper there that Shaq can tap into where he can actually cut a promo on Cody and make it, like, feel genuinely insulting or make it feel like he actually means some part of it. But he doesn't have any juice. Like the rest of the guys on the Inside the NBA show, like, they have very low interest in even the NBA. It seems like they've, you know, they watch whatever game they're there to watch, and they don't really care about basketball otherwise. So he comes here to AEW, and he just doesn't have any juice here. He calls Cody a punk, calls him a punk, says he has stupid blonde hair. And I'm not even clear as to why he doesn't like Cody in the first place, because the whole storyline went awry because it was based on the idea that Cody called out Giants, but then Shaq explicitly said, no, I'm not mad at Cody. But now it's just, it doesn't make any sense, and there's just no fire or juice coming from Shaq's side of it, which goes to what Mike said, that if this is going to work, it's going to come down to really Red Velvet and Jade Cargill putting something together.
Yeah, and it's something where this, when I said everything was kind of falling into place, when we have some coherence here, you have to have, be like, Shaq, dude, we know that you kind of have this like personality that's very laconic, but we need you to like show something and some sort of coherence, because there is, the whole entire Cody and Shaq aspect of this whole entire storyline has had no coherence whatsoever. And even though like Shaq like finally acted like he wanted to be in this match or wanted to have a fight with Cody, I don't feel like we're asking for too much for saying like, hey, what's the motivation here other than Jade once saying like giant killer, you think you're a giant killer. Like that's kind of the only reason why we are here other than what happened later between Jade and Brandy. So like, and the failing of that is like, you look at Cody, that when he's cut his promos have been fine. Jade has greatly improved. Red Velvet stepped up and immediately became one of the better things in this angle. Shaq, you're coming in here for this. You're supposed to be this big star coming in here for this. Do you care? Or is it something where you're just kind of doing this because you know it's good business to do this?
Yeah, I just think he should care more. Like, we're supposed to believe he's like a big wrestling fan. He always, you know, danced around doing something with the WWE and never did it. And now it's like, oh, no, now here's your chance. And it's just like, I thought you would have more fire or more ideas instead of just feeling like you're going through the motions.
Yeah, I mean, he does a better job making fun of Charles Barkley, you know, than he did here. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't expect him to care too much, because like you said, he doesn't seem to care about the fucking NBA, which is like his job.
Right, I mean, I get not caring about your job, because fuck your job. And he's got a jillion dollars, so what does he care? But why do this? Is the idea of this, you want to do it because you have some passion for wrestling? This is what he should care about if he doesn't care about his job.
Right. I mean, as far as I know, he's not like, his Turner contract doesn't require him to do this match, I don't think. But I mean, yes, it makes sense to not care about your job, but it's like also his whole life, you know, how much of his life has been about the NBA? You know, right. You would think he'd have some interest in the games, but he doesn't seem to, other than, as you mentioned, talking shit about Donovan Mitchell for no reason whatsoever. Yeah, I think this match is going to be, and this build is going to be a huge test of the Cody Ace energy. What can he draw out of Shaq here? Can he put something together that makes some sense? So we'll learn a lot more about who Cody is during this.
I kind of feel like the ship has sailed on it making sense already. Yeah, I just hopefully just like they can get to the finish line in a way that, you know, doesn't that does some favors for Cody and Red Velvet, I guess, and really in Jade Cargill.
All right, Mike. Wow. All right, Mike, buddy, you got something in mind that you didn't like from this show?
Hi, I'm the Muddy.
Mike, buddy, all went into one.
Yeah, I've been feeling really good about AEW lately, so I'm having to kind of just go out seeking something. But Arn Anderson, I guess we're just really fixated on this one program, but Arn Anderson just being like, hey, I'm gonna ramble for a while, and then just cutting just like the most, like, I remember your dad fighting in the LA Forum and then flying so he could see his baby. You still have, and like he tried to link it into like, you still have time to have this match before Brandy is due. It just was very like, this feud I really want to work because I think Jade could be like the star, and I'm happy to see Red Velvet like get elevated, but the dudes in this feud suck. I just Cody's just kind of there, and Arn Anderson cut a real old man rambling promo, and Shaq doesn't want to be there, and it just like, but Arn on this show, like, don't see the whole entire purpose of Arn and part of the segment. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, Arn started talking and my dinner got delivered, and then I went downstairs to pick up my dinner, and you know, takes a while. He came back and he was still fucking talking. It's like, how long is this guy been talking? I could not believe it because I was already bored on my way out the door. No, the old people shouldn't talk anymore in general, but especially on the television show. Old people should shut the fuck up pretty much on every topic. I don't have a specific age. What's Jericho now? 48 or something? Is he 50?
Chris Jericho, is he 50? Yeah.
Is he 50?
I don't think he's quite 50 yet.
48? He's 50 years old. Okay, if you're a day older than Chris Jericho, not that I particularly want to hear from Chris Jericho, but certainly if you're older than Chris Jericho, you shouldn't talk anymore. So Arn Anderson, no more talking. Jim Ross, no more talking. The highlight of this program, and I think where AEW can differentiate itself from WWE, is having like good, youthful, vibrant, urgent energy from its wrestlers. Like, that's why people are like, fuck, what's Hook gonna do? I can't wait to see Hook, because Hook has like the specific chip on his shoulder, shitty kid energy that is like missing in Major League Wrestling, and he brings that. I mean, same thing for like Ricky Starks or Darby Allin. It's like, oh, they have a youthful energy that is contemporary and makes this feel like a modern show that is of its time and not of 20 years ago. And that's like sunk when you let Arn Anderson ramble on for 50 minutes. No more old people.
Cancel old people. Sorry, somebody just sent me a, I don't know if you guys know this, but Masahiro Tanaka, who used to pitch for the Yankees, has announced today he's going back to Japan.
Announced yesterday.
That may be true. Somebody sent me a tweet just now that's from a Japan Yahoo article, and it's apparently just about Gary Sanchez calling Tanaka pizza because his nipples look like pepperonis, and asking me if I could translate it, which of course I fucking can't because I don't know kanji or not enough kanji, but Google suggests, or Twitter suggests, that that's what it's about. That's all. So I was just reading about Tanaka's pepperoni sized nipples as you were talking about old people.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. It really hurts me. Everybody knows I love Arn Anderson, but he's really just a useless part of this story or whatever, this act. It's just bad. I agree. Speaking of things that I think are useless, my delete, they have somehow made me not excited when Adam Page shows up on these shows.
I didn't think that's the direction you were going. I thought you were going to go the other way on your list here.
Oh, no. That was kind of an afterthought. It wasn't that bad, really. We'll talk about it when we get there. But
this is the weak part of this segment, I think. Okay, go on.
But fucking Matt Hardy coming out during this match. Matt Hardy anywhere near Adam Page is bad. But then Matt Hardy being like, oh, hey, don't you need some new friends? Don't you need a place where there's not people who are bothering you like the Elite did? And it's like, as somebody pointed out in our Discord, he's offering exactly what the Dark Order offered Adam Page. That's the same thing. We're just doing the same angle. Every Adam Page angle is he going to join up with these people, or is he going to continue being part of these people? Just like all the angles, as Nate talked about, I think, last week. It's just like, can we please get away from this and just let Adam Page do anything else? Before COVID started, they had this guy looking like the next big, huge star in this company. And maybe when fans come back, they'll just be able to flip the switch again. But it's now to the point where I would just rather him not be on the show if they're going to do these angles constantly. I hate it.
Yeah, I mean, my own, like, if I'm doing work on behalf of the promotion and I want to justify this, it's like, okay, I like that all these people want a piece of Adam Page. It's like, okay, he's a star. Like, the Dark Order wants him because he's a big star and he's really good. And Matt Hardy wants him because he's a big star and he's really good. That would be a okay justification, I think, even though I just don't need to see Matt Hardy on television every single week or twice a week. But yeah, the turning it all into, I want Adam Page in this group, and also he's sad about it. Is not, I think, beneficial to what made people excited about him.
It just comes off as like just stale, like, left for lack of a better word, stale. Just like the fact that you literally finished that storyline, or what we are assumed to be the endpoint of Adam Page and the Dark Order, you finished that last week, and now you are doing it again. So I don't know if I'm to the point of Aaron and thinking that he should just go away or just go wrestle and do things of absolutely zero consequence other than just being a guy right now, but they have completely marginalized him in such a way that, like, the now, like, the big thing was, like, he was, like, trying to be able to, like, pave his own path. He wanted to be his own guy, and that was, like, the big storyline for a long time, and before COVID was, like, okay, Adam Page is now his own thing, and now we're, like, doing this thing now for almost 12 months of, does Adam Page have any agency whatsoever? And it does kind of seem like, unless he's going to, like, end up going, like, you know what, I don't want to be in part of your group, I don't want to be part of your group, I don't want to be part of your group, I'm starting my own group. Unless that's the end point, and that's where they're trying to get to, is that he just gets frustrated of other people making decisions and he elects to do this them himself, what's the point? I don't know if there is one other than they like having funny chyrons about his existential nightmares.
Yeah, it's just funny because I complain sometimes that they, like, although I guess people give me shit for this, but I complain sometimes that they do things too fast, like angles too fast. But then some angles, they just drag on for fucking ever and they never end. And all I'm asking for is a happy medium. But this does lead me into the listener delete of the show, which is from our good friend and brother for some of us on the show, Drew Spears, who says, delete the glacial pace of Sammy and MJF splitting the inner circle. Have to agree.
Really, it really sinks our arguments against all the nepotism in this promotion when you just have the listener elites and deletes just be family members and then Kara from the show. yeah, really, really shows our biases, I think. I will say, all the Dark Order people were like tweeting when Matt Hardy came out and did this, and were like, wow. And it's like, stay away from him. And like, wow, it's fucked up. So I do kind of, if this is a route to get to an angle where the Dark Order now is mad at Matt Hardy and Private Party, I think that's a good little next feud for both those teams. Because the Dark Order is our baby faces now, and we don't really, can't really be sure what they're going to do with them next. I think that'd be a good place to take this and get something positive out of it.
All right, let's talk about ratings real quick. AEW, a big drop down to 734,000, but sixth, is that right? Sixth in the demo?
Yep.
With a 0.29? Mm-hmm. Oh, good for them. but they were 33rd last week, is that right?
Yeah.
This segment I call Aaron Reads Mike's Notes and is increasingly surprised. NXT had a bump. Up to 720,000, 24th in the demo with a 0.21.
So, like, the big story, and this is the part of the segment where Mike explains his notes to Aaron. So, Aaron, you know about how there was the big outage with streaming providers during the first match of AEW?
I did notice that from our good friends in the Discord.
Yeah, it affected me as well. I think that some of this is because you look at the rest of the TV, we've kind of gone back to a null state where you look at, like, the rest of the programming and it's all just kind of there and it all looks pretty decent, I would say, with how you expect. News stuff is kind of curtailed a little bit, though it's kind of interesting now that CNN is the top dog, not MSNBC, whereas you would expect in the past. But yeah, so it, other than Rachel Maddow is the top news show, so we do have that. but I think this is something because there are certain things that Nielsen pulls from to develop their rating, especially when it is non-traditional cable. YouTube TV, Hulu, and Sling, all three of those are incorporated in the immediate overnights. Everything else is in the plus three and plus sevens. I can't say this for sure, but I think there's enough of a statistical effect, I would think, of this, that this would affect that. So, yeah, that's really the big thing. No other big takes other than it's the female viewership, which they've been doing pretty strong on. There was a pretty significant drop with that. I mean, the rest of it looks pretty much as you'd expect. NBA was back on top, challenge number two, Rachel Maddow 5, Real Housewives 4, then AEW. And then NXT is just kind of where NXT is.
Well, Rachel Maddow had Zinni Jardine on, I think. So that explains the bump for her.
Boing boings, Zinni Jardine. Did she ask the one question that we all have to ask about Zinni Jardine and Rachel Maddow?
I have to say that I did not actually watch the segment.
Was she actually on, or was it just a screenshot going around of a previous appearance because of the other funny looking guy?
Yeah, no idea. I just saw a picture of her on Rachel Maddow, okay, and I decided to say
I'm not positive that was last night. That could have been any other day over the last few years.
Yeah, ever. Have no idea. But anyway, let's break down the show this week. Week 69, a very nice episode of Dynamite. Kicked off with a nice match. Eddie Kingston defeating Lance Archer with a loaded back fist. The Butcher and Blade dragged out Jake Roberts. Before the match, Lance was like, Jake, you know, you can stay in the back. After the match, Butcher and Blade dragged him out. And while everyone was distracted, the Bunny gave Eddie a knuckle duster. And he hit him with it. And Team Eddie attacked Archer after the match.
He hit him with the dang weapon. Fucked up. He admitted. This really benefited from the really bonkers looking bump right at the top where Eddie was getting like choke slammed from the inside onto the apron on the outside. And like missed the apron with half of his body. So it really looked gnarly. And that just like immediately got me interested in the match. So everything from that point forward was like much more effective. So yeah, really good show opening match. That wasn't, you know, a sprint tag.
And they actually are going to have some consequences for the cheating. So I'm excited about that. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. We had a Jon Moxley pre-tape, lots of pre-tapes.
Do you think we'll ever have the Bunny? Do you think the Bunny's done wrestling? They may be like, hey, the Bunny, here's your consequences. You have to wrestle Jade in a warm-up match or whatever.
Ooh.
But it just seems like she doesn't wrestle anymore.
She doesn't even wrestle on Dark, now that I think about it. She just never wrestles. We had the Mox pre-tape. He's confused about how this Elite thing is going. He doesn't think it's going to work out in the end. He's also confused about the Death Triangle. But he likes having sex in the morning, and he likes six-man tags, and he thinks this one he's going to have next week is going to be incendiary.
Yeah, I don't like the Moxley promos where he's being the voice of the company as much as his promos where he's talking about things personal to himself. And this was much more like, check out AEW Dynamite. It's going to be good.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much people liked this because I thought it was pretty cheesy.
I think that's just people, you know, defaulting to their default position on this guy, which is that he's good promo.
Yeah. Not my favorite. But yes. Yeah. This rolled right into a Sting and Darby pre-tape. Sting said, since we're going to be in a street fight, I want you to know you're throwing out a lot of accusations and it hurts my feelings. You called us hoodlums. He admits that Darby might in fact be a hoodlum. And Darby says, You see, in the streets, it doesn't matter if you play clean or play dirty. It's all about survival. He throws his skateboard through a window. That's just a skateboard gone. And he says he is a hoodlum. No different from you. I presume he means Taz. He means Sting. He's telling Sting he's also a hoodlum. Sting breaks some windows, admits he's a hoodlum, and says a revolution. It's going to be showtime.
Yeah.
Great.
The Darby thing just made me laugh because I started thinking about the Warren G, the thing from Regulators, you know, where it's like, any stealing of this part, you got to be damn good if you know what I mean. Earn your keep. That's what Darby was going for here, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this benefited so much just from any sort of change of scenery. Like, they didn't have any better idea than they've had over the last, 10 weeks of running this angle in the ring over and over again. But it's like, hey, let's go somewhere else and we can break some windows. And it made for a 200% better segment. And Sting, like, bringing some weird comic energy to this. Like, he's fully Impact Sting in this vignette. He's like verging on Insane Icon Sting. And it totally works. And it was a joy to me.
Yeah. This was a blast. And it shows you how much just shaking things up slightly can change things that feel stale. Because we actually have now, over the past 2 weeks, have had some evolution in this storyline, finally. My only disappointment is that we did not have, like, the snow machine going off inside the warehouse. And also, I wonder, because they've had, like, a lot of, like, these, like, set-piece promos over the last, even on the show. I mean, you had Moxley, who was looking like he was doing this at a construction site. That's his place. Darby gets an abandoned building, and then Pac gets his former church-like place. It makes me wonder, like, how many buildings do the cons have access to in the city of Jacksonville? I need to ask the real Duval heads and see what they say on the streets about this.
Well, you see in the streets, Mike, doesn't matter if you play clean or dirty.
Like, I would recommend, if you know any hood barbershops in Duval, to go check those out and see see what's being said in the hood barbershops. They have the real word on what's going down in the streets.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate you got what I was going for, even if AB just completely let it sail by.
Sorry, all I can think about is this.
The pepperoni nipples, yeah.
Yes. It turns out that the tweet I was being sent was a Masahiro Tanaka tweet where he was denying that he has pepperoni nipples and that he's ever been called pepperoni nipples.
So this is actually something that Masahiro Tanaka has to address now in social media, is Gary Sanchez claiming that a claim that Gary Sanchez made fun of his pepperoni boy nipples.
Yes. So that's happening. Twitter.com.
Is this what this year's come to already? We're 28 days in and we have okay. I'm revising this right now. Just right now. Just thinking about this right now. There
he's talking
we go.
About his mental health thermometer, folks. I think he's erased the entire thermometer.
I think he just crashed hard.
Yeah, I just why?
It's sub awful at this point.
I
mostly have to blame Aaron for this, for continuing to push this narrative about the pepperoni nipples.
Well, this broke me. The whole like thing about like that this is a news story now that I assume now it's an international news story, at least in the baseball community between NPB.
Well, Aaron is making one again. We have to hold people accountable for their social media behavior, and I think Aaron's podcast behavior falls into that.
I will say, in fairness, Tanaka is hitting the WWW on his, as part of this tweet. So, I mean, he's laughing about this.
Oh.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad now. But I'm still like, this is stonks. Yes,
I just found out recently that WWW means LOL in
It can just be a single W. In fact, when you say multiple W's, it makes me think World Wide Web, and then I get confused.
I had a friend in high school who's lived with her grandparents, and they said she couldn't go on the internet because WWW actually stood for 666. And so when anybody says WWW, that's what it makes me think of.
That's like 35% of the population is on that level of conspiratorial thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. But these people were way ahead. I mean, this was.
They're ahead of the time for sure.
Yeah.
Pioneers.
Speaking of conspiracy theorists, Chris Jericho and Maxwell Jacob Friedman defeated the Varsity Blondes with the Judas Effect Lion Salt combination. Before the match, MJF invited Griff Garrison to say, "I quit," in a callback to their previous interaction, but Griff hit him instead.
Yeah, really, like I said on Twitter, really maximizing the use of Brian Pillman here, I think. And yeah, really, I'm so bored of Chris Jericho, but this exceeded my expectations because I was like, oh wow, Griff Garrison really showing some fire here. That kept me engaged, and Judas Effect still a great looking finisher on top of the Lion Salt, so yeah, it was good.
Yeah, Brian Pillman somehow finding like the ideal role for him is just being a plucky babyface with very little personality. Like,
yeah, he cannot show an ounce more of personality because his personality for sure stinks. So he's just got to be Griff Garrison's anonymous tag partner.
Yeah, yeah. Who has a lacrosse stick as a weapon, apparently, on Dark? Like, his weapon is a lacrosse stick.
He's got a Benghazi lacrosse stick as a weapon, and he's going to use it by posting.
Well, it's not going away.
It's not.
Even the lacrosse stick.
I don't know. I'm the Brian Pillman defender on this podcast.
He had the worst match I've ever seen live, and that is how I will think of him until he has like an incredible match. Because I was at that Brian Pillman versus Tommy Dreamer match in MLW, and I did want to die.
Who did we see him wrestle in? Where was that? New York?
I feel like I need to apologize again for the show. Each time that we bring up this U.S. versus the World show where it was like Brian Pillman. I don't even remember.
Emil Satochi or whatever.
It was Emil Satochi. Yes, the former WXW star.
I always mistake that guy with the MLJ.
No, never mind. Not going to do it. Okay. There was a pack pre-tape. He says, Kenny's been acting like Billy Big Bollocks. And he just wants everybody to know that he and the Death Triangle hate Kenny. Kenny and his friends hate them back. And next week, they're going to face the consequences.
This is good.
Oh, yeah.
Pack being good. Pack being great. Pack standing around the loft of his abandoned church without in his wrestling gear. Like, just Pack being Pack.
Shaq. We got the Shaq thing that they talked about earlier. Cody came out with Tony Schiavone. And yeah, we've talked about this. So we're just setting up that match. Then we had pre-tape for there's a wedding happening next week, folks. Penelope invites everyone. And Miro tells us that Charles Taylor is going to be there.
So I love Miro. I have to be when Excalibur threw to this, he said that Miro and Kip are inviting you. And it's like, Miro is not getting married. You are the weddings in our culture are largely, thought to be like the most important day for the bride. That's like her most important day of her life's wedding, you know? But Penelope, you know, at least got to say like one thing of this because otherwise has been totally secondary in this angle. But I can't be too mad because Miro flashing his superstar smile and giving Charles Taylor a hard time is very entertaining, and Miro kicks ass.
Yeah, but where is the bachelor party? We were promised a bachelor party.
So I think Oatgan suggested that the bachelor party did occur. Maybe that was the tape segment we saw where Billy Mitchell was there.
Oatgan said the opposite.
Oh, okay.
Oatgan said that he went back and watched it, and it was they were planning the bachelor party.
Maybe it's on Dark this week.
I think it's probably not happening.
Real.
It's really too bad. Because that does.
There with is Charles like, there. Rich,
yeah, with Chuck Taylor there dressed as a butler. It's a rich vein, and it just seems like we're not going to get it.
It's something that like this wedding has been on the periphery for such a long time, but now I'm really sad that it's going to happen because I want to see more of Miro and Charles Taylor. Like, I feel like that we're getting like this very short thing here that, I mean, the old school like territory lover in me wants him to like have this be like a long drawn out like 60 days that he has to be the butler to all of them, and then he finally snaps when the days are up, and now we already get the blow off, which I'm not complaining about. I think that this storyline is interesting, and I think it's going to get the response it deserves. It's just like kind of feels like it's suddenly upon us.
I just want something. I need something to deliver that makes sense of Penelope basically doing nothing in this angle for the last 6 months or whatever it's been. I've heard some people think that she's going to leave Kip for Orange, which I think is not. I don't think that makes sense for Orange going forward and having Orange continue to be a big star on this program. I think Penelope has to leave Kip for Miro, and then Kip just has to like eat it and be like, fine, I don't have any other friends. You can take my fiance. I'm just going to continue to pal around. And remember that Chappelle show sketch where the guy's masturbating in the corner in the dark. That's what Kip Sabian should be doing.
What if Penelope leaves Kip for Charles?
That's better than Orange for sure.
Yeah.
And Charles, of course, isn't like famously married to someone like Miro is.
Right, right.
But I don't really, they are both Philadelphia people.
That's true.
I don't really know if that works for Chuck.
I guess what I love about all this is that Miro, I think this was on Talk with Jericho, where he was like, man, when I talked with Tony about this big angle, you know, as the best man, I just knew that's what I had to do. And then from there, you know, I'll move on to my next thing. And it's like, this has been the dumbest, like the only good part about this angle is the Charles Taylor thing, which fell in their laps because Trent
Billy Mitchell.
No, Mitchell. I like the angle overall, mostly because of just Miro's performance in it. Like, sure. Yeah, it wouldn't work with almost anybody else. But he
sold it like it was going to be this like big. You know, we've already worked out 2 months of television on this angle, but it was like nothing really happened. Pretty funny.
I'm gonna get excited for this segment on the day of and be like, oh boy, here comes the wedding. Something's gonna happen, and I'm gonna get into it.
Next up, Hangman Page defeated the Hollywood hunk, Ryan Nemeth, with the Buckshot Lariat. The floor is open.
Hi, Young Briley. I guess I don't understand, like, why his choice is to come in here and have his gimmick be I'm super good looking, and then he does a bunch of his older brother's taunts and spots. I don't understand that choice. I do. I'm kind of sympathetic and almost rooting for him in a bit, like. He clearly got like a bad run of things in like FCW. Like he was there, I think, in the Bill DeMott era. And then after that, like, you know, I don't want to say he went to work for Bar Wrestling and obviously did not come away from Bar Wrestling with having had a positive experience. I think you can look at his timeline and conclude that. So, you know, I kind of a sympathetic character, I think, between those experiences.
Sure. Yeah.
I just don't understand why he's like, okay, I'm going to have generic taunts. I say hunk on them. My whole thing is going to be how I'm super hot and good looking and young, according to his Twitter handle, which I would have changed. And then he just like does, hey, you know, my more famous older brother, check me do his shit out. That's, I would go a different direction if I was
if you were hot young bro, right?
If I was as hot and as young as hot young Briley, and I think I am younger, I'm certainly not as hot as hot young Briley, I would go a different direction.
I don't know, Nate. I mean, I was not really impressed with the looks of one hot young Briley.
Well, I don't think the hair is doing me any favors either. Honestly,
it's very weird.
I think he used to be bigger, and I think his hair used to be better, and I would not have made the same aesthetic choices as him.
Yeah, he definitely was bigger before.
Yeah,
It was a lot of weird choices going on, but yeah, he is 36, so I think
older than all of us.
Yeah, I think we all come in as
the Young Bucks. A lot of hay has been made about the Young Bucks still being called the Young Bucks. But at least that's like a team name. And Nick Jackson is still like quite young. Hot Young Briley, certainly at 37, I don't think you can be called young, right? Like 36 is kind of pushing it.
I mean, and wrestling, I wouldn't be
young at 37. In wrestling.
Like no, maybe, no.
Yeah. 37, you're basically 40.
Yeah. And when you're 40, you're basically 50. When you're 50, you might as well be dead.
Yeah, so yeah, you got like basically a year left on the clock, Hot Young Briley, and then you're basically dead.
It's just something like I totally understand why he would want to, and I was actually talking with Drew about this, about him wanting to leave wrestling on better terms.
Yeah,
and if that's the case here, totally fine, totally get this. Nice little thing you're doing for someone that I mean, as you said, like, sadly, like, the second chapter of this guy's career is completely going to have marks against it because of where he was based and who he was associated with. So totally understand that. But it's just one of the more bizarre things that this promotion has done, has suddenly not only given a match, but given, like, premium shoulder content time to hot young Briley, the Hollywood hunk, Ryan Nemeth, and then the match just kind of being there. Like, this, like, we've talked about this match more so than it deserved any effort because of how confusing it is that hot young Briley was here.
I kind of want to, let's workshop better gimmicks for hot young Briley, because he can do something better than I'm Dolph Ziggler's brother. That's what he did in this match.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, to me, it's pretty easy to be like, my brother's more successful than I am, and it eats at me. I failed at wrestling, and now I want to do better. And so you can either do that in, like, he can be embittered, or he can be, like, a really positive thing, like, I'm going to overcome the shadow of my younger brother, or whatever, or older brother, I don't fucking know.
Yeah, with the younger brother, that's a different thing.
Yeah, but it's, like, very easy, like, that's an easy story to tell.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And they kind of told it in the Road 2 video, but then he just, like, he literally did the spots and had the blonde hair. Like,
yeah,
very strange.
You might as well call him Rolf the Ziggler and just kind of get along with it, because that's what he kind of is. Like Michael Schumacher and Rolf Schumacher, he's the worst brother. So,
oh, I thought you were just rhyming Rolf with Dolph.
Well, I was there, but then I was able to pull it into something. I pulled that out of my ass. Was that pretty nice? You like that there, Nate?
That was great.
I don't know the Schumacher family, but it makes sense to me.
Well, I mean, you know who Michael Schumacher is, right?
Yeah. I don't know Rolf Schumacher is the point.
Fail son, a fail younger brother. Yeah.
I only know one Rolf, and I think that's the dog from the Muppets. I'm not 100% on that.
But honestly, like, being like the bitter younger brother is a lot more compelling character than just literally looking like your gear was hand-me-downs from your older brother, where you just put hunk on your ass instead of, I don't know, whatever weird thing that Dolph Ziggler thinks is funny and cute nowadays. But it's just, I would love to know what the justification about this entire thing is.
Yeah, I can't work my way around it. It is a strange set of choices for me.
And now I'm dealing with this right after pepperoni nipples and Masahiro Tanaka. Like, I am. This is bad. Just
Mike's had to deal with a lot here.
Yes. I was going to clarify the bar wrestling thing, and then I realized I don't need to be.
Stay away from me.
On the other side of a V anytime soon. Okay. Jungle Boy. How about that? Jungle Boy and Dax. We had the hype video from Road 2. Then they wrestled. Jungle Boy won with the snare trap after the match. So they were handcuffed together, but they were, like, very noticeably, or I guess Luchasaurus was, like, very noticeably holding on to the things in between the handcuffs. The
yeah.
And then they, like, I mean, they just, like, weren't connected or something, because they, like, ripped them apart at the end?
Well, I think that's because they were probably gimmicked, and also that probably lessens the pain on his wrists if someone's pulling them away from him.
Sure. Yeah, so they ultimately got away from him. They threw powder in his eyes. They attacked. They went to cut Jungle Boy's hair, but Marco, SCU, and Top Flight made the save.
They first handcuffed Luchasaurus to the ropes and cut off parts of his mask.
That's true.
Horns.
Yeah, his horns. So, yeah, as we said earlier, I thought this was great. I thought
that's what happens when you're too horny. Anybody? Mike just muted himself and backed away from his microphone, just so everybody knows. Okay, Team Taz pre-tape. I guess I can just do whatever I want to now. Nobody's going to interact with me. Taz is cutting a promo. But someone behind them is setting up Sting and Darby gear outside, you know, for all the fans. And Hook and friends attack them.
This was, yeah, just a much better segment than, hey, Sting and Darby in the ring, and we're going to come out and be like, we don't like you guys. Just like any other idea is better than doing the same thing over and over again. Like, honestly, like, this could have been bad, and I would have been like, at least it wasn't the same fucking in the ring angle. But actually, this was good. And like I said, you just got like Hook's shitty entitled lacrosse kid energy, which is like perfect. Like that. No, I'm not going to make that reference. And he's beating people up. Brian Cage did the Rey Mysterio lawn dart to a guy against the truck. Ricky Starks like really got a guy up to put him through the table. I'm not convinced the guy wasn't Aaron Solo because he was kind of hiding his face when he was down on the ground. But yeah, this was kick ass. This is like this segment is like all the youthful energy of AEW is like distilled here. Even though you've got like Taz feels very vibrant and you know, contemporary.
Yeah, this rocked. Like it was. I'm now full aboard Team Taz versus the Hoodlums now. Like, this is that they did enough within like 2 minutes to completely stoke any interest I had in this feud and actually make it be something that I'm really looking forward to at Revolution.
Next up, Britt Baker defeated Shanna with the lockjaw. After the match, Britt kept attacking Rosa. Oh, I'm sorry, kept attacking Shanna, but Thunder Rosa made the save.
Good match. Britt Baker, big star.
Yeah, Britt, I felt like that this was really well done, and I'm glad that they kind of now tied it back into Rosa, and now we get to see what the whole thing's going to be coming out of this feud and how it's going to play into the women's title eliminator tournament.
Yeah, Shayna put out a new t-shirt, and it's got like some stars on it, and I'm like, I mean, who knows? Is this some sort of like white supremacist shit? I mean, it's like terrifying. Yeah. Okay, MJF is backstage. He and Sammy, they're getting into it again, folks. They're not seeing eye to eye. But Sammy said he's not playing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it in that voice. I do understand that it's just they're doing this week after week. But Sammy was good. That's the thing. It's like Sammy's good.
Sammy's always good.
Yeah. So his thing when he said, I'm not playing, was like, oh, that's a good line.
It was. I'm just bored of it, for sure.
Sure.
Dasha is backstage with the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers. Yeah, they do Biz Cliz stuff.
Yeah, very. Again, very dismissively written with the Biz Cliz stuff on your notes. Whereas I think it deserved a higher level of discourse. Like they were making all these dick jokes. They were swinging their belts around like they were dicks. Sure. What else did they say?
Donna Conda.
That was good.
No, I enjoyed it a lot, but it's just like, again, well, I'm not going to write all this shit down.
Suck it was in there.
Sure.
And I was right.
Mike was right.
Or at least I'm going to be proven just, right.
I was just avoiding writing it all down.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay. Know, so Mike was right about Don Callis seemingly faking that he was assaulted.
No, I was right about that, Nate. I'm the one who said it.
Okay. Well, now I don't know. No, you're probably right, Aaron. That was probably you.
I can't believe I'm being notes, if you I can't believe that like right now after my last 20 minutes I'm being gaslit like this.
Well, that's
it's
only effective when you're vulnerable, Mike, so you have to
I'm exceedingly vulnerable at this moment.
You have to create that opportunity and then exploit
and just get out ahead right. of this. I do not want to see photos of Trent's nipples into my mentions after this.
Trent's nipples?
Why would you say that?
Because Trent's known, as Chuck said, that he has big pepperoni boys.
Was this discussed? Or is this new information?
This is canon on Best Friends, on Poppin' Dogs, okay. Talkin' Hog.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that. I would not have said that you want to see photos of Trent's nipples being sent.
I said I did not want to see this.
Wait. Let me get this straight.
Aaron, that's not what I heard.
Yeah, no, I understood you want to see pictures of Trent's nipples in your mentions. That's what I heard.
Stop bullying me.
I was thinking like maybe Cesaro nipples also. He's got, I mean, famously big nipples. Mike? Okay, Mike's silence is acceptance, I believe. So.
No, it's not.
Keep that in mind, friends. The Young Bucks and the Good Brothers defeated John Silver, Alex Reynolds, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson. Matt pinned Stu Grayson with the Meltzer driver. After the match, Matt said if the Bucks are now going to be in this tag team battle royal, and if they win, they get to handpick their opponent. And think about it. It could be anybody. And then the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers do the famous hand sign. Phoenix comes out, but the Good Brothers attack him. Mox makes the save. Omega comes out. But Mox hits him with the paradigm shift.
really good angle to close it out, mostly because like Phoenix comes out like a badass. He's like, I'm going to beat all these four guys up. I don't care. Then he did a sick dive where, you know, as I always put over with Phoenix, he aims for about the second row in the fans. But he got clipped on the gate, but then ended up just sitting on the barrier. So that was badass. So yeah, that was like pretty hype. Not like especially hype for, hey, we're going to be in a battle royal and we might win and then challenge our friends who we are mad at. That's like whatever as far as an angle goes for me. And, you know, we've at length on this show, I think, complained about the tag team gauntlet battle royal booking ad infinitum. But everything else here was like pretty hot and cool.
Hot Phoenix looks cool. Like a badass.
You get them both.
Right. Yeah. They're like, Phoenix somehow like managed to defy physics when he like entered the ring and like springboard off the ropes. It was tight. And, you know, I love a good trios match and I'm stoked for that next week.
Interesting to me that, or not, I mean, it's obvious, but it's kind of funny that the Beaver Boys are now above Uno and Grayson in the hierarchy of tag teams.
Yes.
Thanks.
It is funny. I've talked about how it was weird that the Smash Brothers were like pretty much not used during the pandemic as a tag team when they were one of the most pushed acts in the first, you know, 3 months of the company or whatever. I mean, they're good. Stu Grayson does crazy things in every match that he's in.
All right, that was the show. That was the episode for this week. If you want to support this show, you can head over to patreon.com/everythingelite, where we bring you tons of bonus content. 3 tiers you can subscribe to. The $5 tier gets you all the audio we do and all the audio we've ever done. This week, our bonus episode was a new series featuring yours truly, Mixtape Club. I sat down with K-Slow. You know, we sat down, had a little chat, as opposed to all my standing podcasts. Well, Nate does stand during this podcast. So we talked about Tough Guy Hardcore, which you probably don't know about, you probably don't care about. But if you go listen to this, you'll have a good time. We even included some clips from the songs, so you'll get a sense of what Tough Guy Hardcore sounds like. Thanks to Mike. I was working on trying to make that happen where people could hear things. Mike helped me figure that out, and we made it happen. So it's fun. Listen to it.
It's about respect.
It is. If you've ever just needed respect in your life, you'll like Tough Guy Hardcore. Trust me. Wednesday, we did Light, as we always do. That's where we preview Dynamite, review Dark. Nate gives us the vlog quick hits. Mike and I usually talk about dumb shit for at least 15 minutes of that episode. Always fun. And then Mike on Friday, which I guess is tomorrow. So this is coming out. This hasn't come out yet.
No.
Your old pals Go Big Show Funtime Jamboree.
Yep. I'm determined to watch every second of the Go Big Show and talk about it and talk about what is going big, what is a stupid human trick, and who should be immediately signed. And, you know, last time we had a guy get shoved into a sleeping bag full of snakes. That was something on basic television.
Is that going big?
It was going big. Let me pull up my notebook where I do transcribe notes for the Go Big Show.
Is the Go Big notebook the same as your match notebook, or are they different notebooks?
No, this is just a reporter style Phil notes book.
Oh, that's disappointing.
It's like a flip through it. Yeah.
Thought he was going to show us where he'd written Go Big on the front of the notebook.
No. So it was a tank of rattlesnakes. They put 7 rattlesnakes in there. The guy lost his leg because of rattlesnake bites. He's been in the hospital 12 times due to it. And he advanced on. He had one of the highest scores of the episode. He scored a 91 on the power tower of going big.
Yeah, that sounds very stupid. So in the next round, is he just going to get another sleeping bag full of rattlesnakes?
I guess they're going to have to add like more snakes into it. I mean, unless he's going to do like full-on snake charming, or like if he's going to be doing just like things you see in tent revivals. But I mean, this is the kind of content you expect, is me grappling with like what is going big, what is a stupid human trick, how many different archery things we have going on, because they have like an archery thing each week. And
I would like to see if he could shoot a snake like an arrow. That would be going big to me.
That's enormously big. I mean, that's a hundo, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's automatic. Big stat.
Yeah, and then you're all elite. I mean, at that point, you have to be signed.
Right. And then you're like, every show should open with you shooting an arrow that's actually a snake into Jim Ross or something.
or into a plunger that sets off the pyro to start each week.
Yes, sure. And also Jim Ross in a dunk tank.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I mean. That's the other thing. Like, there's dunk tanks on this. Cody talks about needing therapy about every episode once or twice. You know,
Cody talks about his dad a lot. I'm betting that comes up.
Yes, yeah, yes. It's the Cody needs therapy show.
Much like the show and Mike. There's so many tribulations.
Evolve 109 is the thing I'll be seeing my therapist this week.
Next. No, Everything Elite 109?
Evolve 109. We got to go back and see what was on that show.
What was on Evolve 109? Let me check.
Let me just say this. Next week on the Patreon, we're still in discussions about what's going to be on the Patreon next week. So, but there will be something on Monday, as always, light. And then if you join, please join us in our Discord. It's almost the first of the month, so we got a whole new month of stuff for you. So patreon.com/everythingelite. Interestingly, the main event of Evolve 109, very AEW-centric, Joey Janela with Penelope Ford defeating Darby Allin for the WWN title.
Yeah, I think were me and Oatgan on the podcast of that show? I think that was the one where we were like, this isn't really what we want to see from Joey Janela. And then David Mix like blew it up and he's like, you guys don't think he's a good worker? Like, no, it's not really what we said. And then Joey Janela blocked us.
So like this
I'm
is a
sure
big...
that was this match.
Well, it was this match. Yes. This is the Melrose match. This may have had was this have an Adam Cole signing on it too, maybe? I can't remember if Adam Cole made an appearance.
Seems like it was probably the right era.
It did have Saeed Al-Sabah on the show.
It did against AR Fox. Saeed. I don't remember that match, but
Saeed definitely was either excited that I put him over on the podcast or on Twitter. Because then he followed me and like added me and was like, you're awesome. I was like, actually, no, Saeed, you're awesome.
I love Saeed. I will never, I mean, for as long as I live, I will not forget seeing Saeed Al-Sabah outside of Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, just hang on the corner, hanging out. But probably Oatgan was like, hey, it's Saeed. Right?
It was definitely Ogun. Like, oh, look, Saeed Al-Sabah. And I mean, this is the best part of the story. And Ogun always reminds us of this, that he was handing out flyers for a show in Florida.
Yes. Yes.
That's flyering. That's grinding to get people at your show. Going to Madison Square Garden to hand out shows, flyers for your show in Florida.
It was like a Jacksonville show, too.
It might have been for the fake GCW.
I think it was for Generation Championship Wrestling.
Next week on Dynamite, Beach Break, we got the Kenny Omega and Good Brothers team versus Jon Moxley, Pac, and Fenix. That should rule. We got Penelope and Kip's wedding, Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa, the tag team battle royale for a title shot at Revolution, and a lumberjack match, Eddie Kingston versus Lance Archer. Tony Khan apparently woke up while watching the show, saw someone cheating, decided there should be some consequences. So there's not going to be any cheating during this lumberjack match.
I'm really excited to see, much like the big Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows feeding for John Silver, the big Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows feeding for Ray Fenix. That's very exciting.
They don't want to wrestle, but they have to wrestle Fenix.
Yeah. Fenix is not going to have any of their half-ass shit. I will say, Carl Anderson still moves around in there very well. Looks in spry. I would call him spry in the ring.
Yeah. Doc Gallows wearing a onesie.
Doc Gallows also, but like in good shape.
No. I mean, he's the suntan biker man. So, yeah, he just was like Doc Gallows. I mean, like you could hear him saying, "I don't want to be here" when this was happening, and it was owned. Like, it looks like a fun show, which means that we're gonna be disappointed.
Yes, we also found out that coming soon, we don't have a date for this, the first match we know from the Women's Eliminator Tournament in a shocking announcement on the U.S. side of the bracket. So first thing we find out, there is indeed a U.S. side of the bracket and presumably a Japanese side of the bracket since the other side has a Japan flag, but they didn't say that. But on the U.S. side of the bracket, Serena Deeb versus Riho. So we were wrong about what's going to happen, but Riho is in the tournament.
Big swerve. Very funny to announce this, but have no idea what the date's going to be.
Yeah.
Which I guess if we give them the benefit of the doubt, it's like, oh, they have to figure out when Riho will finish the quarantine or whatever. And then, we're not going to promise anything until that happens. That's, you know, if we are giving them the benefit of the doubt. But very funny. We're now to a good tournament. Here's a match. We have no idea when this is going to start.
Why don't you just say Riho's going to be in the tournament? Like, that's a selling point.
Yeah, just say, like, one of the first round matches will be Riho versus Serena Deeb. That's all you have to say. We'll announce the rest of the bracket.
That is basically what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just announced, like, oh, Riho's going to be in this. Like, that would be cool. Like, oh, sick.
I'm just excited that Riho gets to find new places to go to lunch. You know what I mean? She gets really excited about going to lunch. I mean,
I feel bad for Riho. I do.
I mean, is there anything as good as Mentaiko pasta in Jacksonville, Florida? That's what we'll discover.
Yeah, I'm with the pepperoni nipples guy. If I could make as much money staying in Japan, I would stay in Japan. But
I think her money maybe dried up with the whole... I mean, I guess AEW is still paying her. I don't know, but I guess her startup money dried up.
I mean, yeah.
What a worker, by the way. What a worker going in there, becoming a champion, not having to lose the championship in a fall, not dropping a fall the entire 18 months she's in stardom. Just what a worker, Riho.
She's a really good wrestler.
And basically only working like preliminary matches, like nothing serious, nothing hard.
A lot of stuff against the 14-year-old monster, Ruaka. You know what I mean?
15-year-old monster, come on.
Oak, happy birthday.
I don't know if Nate OK still listens to the show, but if he does, he's going to be really pissed at you for getting that wrong.
Okay. I apologize, Nate OK. I'm having a rough night.
He is. When you find out you have pepperoni nipples, it fucks everything up for you.
I am not commenting on that portion of this whatsoever. We're out of here.
You can't shut this show off. If you want to know more about Mike's pepperoni nipples, go to @everythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey, he's flipping me off, folks. He's cutting the feed. He's cutting my mic. He could cut my mic, actually. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review, please. And head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. New stretch goal. See Mike's nipples.
No. You will never. No. I... No, just no.
All right, for Mike, for Nate, for Mike's nipples, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.
You hit it one too many times. Drove it into the ground with the last mention.